Welcome to the Afters Lockdown Podcast with your hosts, Taylor and Robbie.
All right. Last week, we were talking about how difficult it might be to get started with this, and do we say hello or what do we do? And that's perfectly appropriate for this week's topic, which is getting started.
Yep, let's get started. Don't know how to start this podcast, but we're going to talk this time about getting started in the film industry. So I'm Taylor Litton Strain.
And I'm Robbie Miles, and we are tutors for the Bachelor of Arts Screen Production at Afters.
And this is the Afters Lockdown podcast, just a way to try and help keep the Afters community connected during this time.
Yeah, and replicate the kind of chats you'd have in the hallway or waiting for coffee from Fooder and Imogen in the lobby of the school. You can email us on our Afters emails, which is taylor.littonstrain@afters.edu.au.
Or you can email Robbie at robbie.miles@afters.edu.au. Do you know we say afters differently?
We do, don't we?
How do you say it?
I say afters, but other people say afters, right?
No, you said afters just then.
Ah, yeah, I suppose you're right.
We could have a whole conversation on like how you're meant to pronounce A-F-T-R-S.
That sounds like a rabbit hole.
Yeah. Back to what we were talking about.
So we've had no corrections come through this week, because this is the part of the show where we go through anything we got wrong last week or anything that anyone emailed us. But a reminder, that doesn't need to be corrections necessarily. It can be elaborations. It can be something we missed. So please do reach out. If there's something we talked about that you think we should have said more about or that we got a little bit wrong, we want to hear from you, I promise you.
And actually, there was one correction, and it came from the person who's been helping us edit the episode, which is, Robbie, can you please try and not bang your desk as much? I think you're tapping your pen or something.
That's great feedback.
Hidden feedback that other listeners wouldn't be aware of, but when we're editing the episode and just getting out, you know, the burps.
That was me.
It totally was. Okay, so let's just jump into it. I wanted to see what you've been watching this week.
Yeah, the thing I'm absolutely obsessed with is this short film I found called Curve that a friend of mine sent me, which I forwarded to you.
Yeah, I just watched it last night. And at first, you know, the first couple of seconds, I was like, oh, what is this? Just get on with it. And then literally 10 seconds into it, you're gripped from beginning to end. It was awesome. It was so incredible.
You don't need to know why it's happening. You don't need to know where it's happening. Just the fact that it's happening pulls you straight into it.
Okay, we'll definitely put the link in the show notes, and maybe everyone could, you know, pause the episode and quickly go and watch it. It's 10 minutes, it's a short film, set in one location, one actor. It's really incredible. But, I mean, what really resonated for you, Robbie?
Just the mood and the tension. Like, immediately you cared about the character and you didn't want anything bad to happen to them. And I think that's one of the quickest ways I've ever seen that accomplished. And that is, to me, always key for any short film, is that I need to care as quickly as possible that this person's either going to achieve their goal or not be in danger anymore.
Yeah, and for me, it was the tension in it. It was palpable, and I felt myself flinching, and I felt myself sort of reeling back or moving closer and being like, oh no, oh no, oh no. So it's, you know, it's sort of the genre, they called it, it's a horror. You know, if you're scared of intense horror, I think you'll be fine watching it, but the tension is palpable. And I think, you know, I just quickly looked up and it's won a lot of awards because I think it's really thoughtful how it's put together. It's so simple, but it's so powerful the way it affects you.
And it uses the sound design and the textures and everything within the world. And, you know, none of this is a spoiler because I'm trying to avoid that. but the economy of the things that they use throughout it to just build that tension and really put you there was incredible. It reminded me a bit years ago, I told a friend of mine to watch Green Room, which is one of my all-time favorite films by Jeremy Saulnier. And she texted me about 45 minutes later and said, why am I standing on my couch? because she was shouting at the TV, freaking out. And that's how I felt in Curve.
Okay, I still haven't watched The Green Room, so I'll have to watch that. Something that I'd watch this week is I went back and I binged The Hunting, the Closer Productions TV miniseries for SBS. And I just have to say, such a brilliant TV show. And again, it is also very tense. It's more of a drama, but you're watching it the whole time. You're like, oh God, oh God, oh God. I highly recommend it. It is such a fantastic series. So yeah, that was my week of watching.
I haven't seen that, so I'm going to put that on the list.
Yeah, it's awesome. It took me a while to get to it. And I wish I got to it sooner. It was one of those ones I always meant to watch, but it's really fantastic.
Cool. So should we dive into this week's topic? So this week was suggested by another year three student, and I should have checked with them to see if it's okay to use their name, which I haven't done yet. So thank you, anonymous person, for this suggestion. And if you give me permission to say who the idea came from, I'll correct this next week. But the email said, I would love to hear more about how you and Taylor got into film and the steps you guys took to get where you are now. Perhaps this could be a mini-series where you get some of the other actors' staff to share how they got started within the industry. And this could apply to guest speakers too, which Taylor and I both thought was an amazing idea, that we should absolutely get any guest we have on to at least touch on how they got started. Because I think that's such an important thing for, you know, immediately upon leaving film school. How did you make that connection? How did you even know where to start or figure out how to know where to start?
Absolutely. And I was saying to Robbie earlier, I'm starting to get imposter syndrome doing this podcast. But I think it's interesting because we're not actually that far away from the students. One of the things that can be quite valuable for Robbie and I, even though we haven't necessarily reached the peak of our careers, but we have got started and we've left not that long ago, relatively, from film school. And so, you know, I really love the idea of being able to share practical advice of what we did and hope that it's still applicable right now.
Yeah. And you and I are both in an amazing position where we've left the school about 10 years ago and have been working throughout that time on various things. But also we get to work around tutors who are 10, 20 years more experienced than us. And there's so much we can learn from the other tutors and from the students as well.
Yeah, it's an absolute privilege to be teaching. Quite often you're teaching to the students and you're immediately thinking about what you're teaching them and putting it into practice yourself. And it is stuff we know and we practice, but it's such a fantastic opportunity to be reminded of what it is we do and how we do it and really have that opportunity to reflect on it.
Completely agree. So Taylor, let me ask you, as you're about to graduate film school from the foundation year at Afters, what were you thinking about and what did you do?
Okay, so when I was about to graduate the foundation diploma, and at that time it was only a year and I was quite young, and the biggest thing I was thinking about was trying to get a job out in the industry, and I knew I'd be looking for something in an entry-level position in the industry, but I really wanted to try and do that as well as work on my own stuff. And it was important to me while I worked on my own stuff that I could keep a foot in the industry in some kind of way. So just before I was graduating, I was starting to reach out a little bit more and volunteer on some of the master's students, the grad dip students, short films, as well as other people's short films. And I was sort of expanding that network. I think that's how we met, Robbie.
That is exactly how we met. It was on CJ Johnson's film, The Briss.
That's right. And I think I was doing something silly like unit and somebody asked me to go and get ice in the middle of Bondi. And I was walking up to people saying, do you know where I can get any ice? And I was very naive. And I was like, somebody was like,
I remember that.
Yeah. And someone was like, ice? And I was like, oh, you know, like party ice. It didn't help the situation.
And then they're like, what?
Exactly. So I think I met you and I came back just being shell-shocked because this actor had wanted iced water and I couldn't find ice anywhere. And people thought I was scouring the streets of Bondi looking for drugs. So
actually, I remember that being such an amazing day because we had Henry Zepps on the set, terrific Australian actor who was famously in a show called Mother and Son for a long time. And I talked with him in detail about how much that show had meant to me and my family because we'd taken care of my grandmother with dementia. And that show, although a comedy, wasn't funny, it was just true. And he said that was the sort of email or letters back then they received constantly about that show. And I remember you and I were sort of on Henry duty for a while, just taking care of him and doing unit stuff. And I was just sitting there hearing filthy jokes all day. And I had the best day ever on that shoot.
Yeah, it was great. I think there was a few other students with us and we were all kind of green and it was fantastic being on set for me because it was the first time I think I was seeing some pretty, you know, great equipment. Like it was the first time I think I'd been on set with a crane.
Mm.
And that was, you know, there was just something really special about that and being amongst it and getting to see how all the equipment worked and how somebody else put a film together. So to answer your question, I was just really thinking about after studying, how could I watch more people work and how could I continue studying in a way, whether that be volunteering on other people's sets or jumping on other people's sets, but looking at getting on bigger stuff in a very junior capacity, as well as trying to get myself an entry level job.
Right on. Well, that's interesting that you say that, because I was, I didn't leave high school and go straight into study. I left high school and said, okay, well, I'm going to make films. I can figure this out from the internet and Robert Rodriguez's book, Rebel Without a Crew, and do it all myself, which I did. I've joked about this before, but I went and wrote, directed, edited, and shot a semi-autobiographical romantic drama. And you can't see this right now, but I'm cringing into a diamond right now. But that taught me how much I didn't know.
I still haven't seen that feature, by the way.
Yes, very few people have, Taylor. Yes. And it's sitting on a hard drive somewhere in this apartment, but the I spent like $1,500 to screen it on a Saturday night at the Chevelle.
Did you have a good audience turnout?
I did. All my friends and family came along, and we had about 150 people, which was really nice, and they were all very nice about it. But again, I'm glad I finished it. It taught me how much I didn't know, but I went to the AFTERS volunteer night after that, and Peter Malin at the time was running the night, and we had a bit of a screening of AFTERS films, and then went out, and all the directors from the grad dip were waiting to pitch us to come on and work as crew. And CJ Johnson was incredibly kind to me and talked to me about his film The Bris, and I thought it was really funny. But that was, you know, my first experience of actually speaking to people who were really doing this, because everything else had just been in my bedroom other than helping set up lights on one thing years earlier for a friend's dad. So off the back of that, I went to work on about 6 AFTERS shoots. One was, you know, Sparkle the Musical, which was called Sparkle the Musical on the call sheet, but was really called Slut the Musical. And because it was a high school musical that was highly sexualized and very, very funny, they couldn't shoot in a high school with that title, so they changed it on the call sheet.
Smart.
And that's where I met Joel Froom, who I've worked with, I think, 15 times over the last 10 years.
Love Joel.
We've become very close friends as a cine. Yeah, and you've worked with him a lot as well, because he was actually on The Bris as well, the film that we met on.
That's right. And he's a brilliant cinematographer.
Yep.
And he shot some of the earliest films I produced before he left us for the US. And obviously mm-hmm. he's worked with you a lot as well, Robbie.
Yeah, we worked together in New York on the Bond's Love Story for Rachel Taylor. He did second unit on Crush. But my time volunteering on AFTERS productions was my first experience of professional sets. And then later that year, I did my course, which was the grad cert in directing and screenwriting at the time. And that's where I met most of the people that I've worked with consistently over the last 10 years.
I think what we can take away from both of our stories is part of being about to graduate is really, I think, thinking about the people you're working with and who you're having really great relationships with, because it's hard to know who's going to be the cinematographer you create 15 films with from the outset. But film school gives you this really fantastic opportunity to work with people and have the chance to experience what it's like on set with them in a very low risk environment. You know, you don't have a TV executive asking you to do things or a big studio budget to contend with. It's you're at film school, you're making these projects with a bit of a safety blanket, and you're getting to trial and test out who you like working with and who's really great collaborative fit with you.
Yeah, and you can be daring. You can really take a big swing, try it out, and know that you're in a really safe place to do that. I mean, working with Joel has been a dream, and it was almost from that first day, you know, you just get that glint of humor and mania that he has of like, oh yeah, we can probably figure that out. And you start to meet your tribe.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Robbie, what was it like? So you were talking about studying directing and screenwriting at AFTERS. How did that transition you post-study? What was it that you dived into straight after graduating?
Well, I'd always wanted to write and direct, but second to that, I'd always wanted to be just involved in the film industry somehow. And the foundation diploma that you did was such a better grounding in all that. And I had no onset experience whatsoever, yet I was doing a postgrad directing and screenwriting degree.
So just for people who don't know, the foundation diploma, back when I did it, it was sort of the inaugural year that I did it, and it's what morphed to become the BA. So the foundation diploma was probably a bit of a hothouse, and it spat us out really quickly and crammed a lot of what you do over 3 years into one, but it is a generalist course. You get to sort of learn a little bit of everything. You're not coming in with a huge amount of assumed knowledge, Whereas something like yours would have an expectation of that.
That's right. And there was a huge amount of stuff that I just didn't know from a practical on-set point of view that would have informed my writing, probably taught me to be a better director or, you know, understand what was possible and what wasn't. But, you know, immediately after that, I went and did a master's in film and digital image at Sydney Uni. And right at the end of that year, I made two shorts in my time there. And this lovely person I met, Belinda, said, well, why don't you come on board this project, this government thing called Good Beginnings?
Yeah.
You know, I finished that course and I wanted to come back and do full-time directing and I didn't get in. The production values of my own work had grown, but the directing and the screenwriting was still, you know, I wasn't that experienced or doing that well at it. But other people were taking notice that I'd put these together so well and they'd asked if I'd produce their stuff. And I found I really loved doing it.
It's interesting. I think for a long time when you were talking about becoming a director, and I still believe you'd be a really fantastic director, but I think I saw very early on a producing edge to you. And I remember having conversations and you potentially being frustrated with me, but I could just see how much you cared about projects and how much you cared about creators and, you know, how you could really help protect ideas through development. You had really fantastic creative ways of problem solving. And it was always just, to me, I was always like, Robbie should be a producer. And so I'm glad you finally came round to the dark side of producing.
Yeah. And it did take a while for me to think to myself, like, wow, is that really where I want to go and what I want to do? And rather than, you know, what I thought I wanted to do, which was this image of my head as the, you know, hip indie film director who was going to blow everyone away and be the next, you know, Kevin Smith or Quentin Tarantino. I'm really dating myself with those references, but they were the people that made me want to make movies. And, you know, I realized there was a better way to be involved in something that was genuinely bringing me an enormous amount of joy and satisfaction. So I went hell for leather at being a producer.
Yeah. Well, let's go back in time and talk about directly after we graduated, because I think for a lot of people, that's a really scary point, and it's where you've gone from having a timetable and lessons that you're going to and tutors who will be there who you can, you know, organize mentor sessions with, to suddenly being out in the big wide world with nothing ahead of you. I mean, do you remember that feeling when you left?
Yeah, I might have and this is sort of almost a you story that I'll tell, but I had finished study and I was like, okay, well, I've made a short film that was fine. But it wasn't very technically accomplished, but it made something. And I was, you know, looking around for jobs and I didn't quite know what to do. And then I looked at how precise and how carefully planned you had been in going, okay, I'm going to make a really good short. And then that short is going to go here and we're going to apply for money here and we're going to send it to this place. And like, there's actually a logical progression where for me, at least at the outset, I was waiting for someone to scoop me up and take responsibility for my career and go, oh, how can we produce the stuff that you want to direct and, you know, or hire you to do this commercial?
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I do vaguely remember that now. I'd come out of film school and developed this really fantastic relationship with some great crew, including a director. That was Erin Good, who I've gone on to work with so many times. It was actually her. She came to me with an idea for a short film, which I read, and she, you know, was saying, oh, look, we should try and get some funding. And I looked into it, but it just wasn't something I was interested in working on. I asked if she had any other work and she said she didn't. And I was like, well, what did you apply to AFTERS with? And so she showed me her portfolio and she'd done these little paintings of a character. And I was like, this is awesome. What is this? And she was like, oh, well, it's not really anything. It's just this little tiny idea I had for these artworks. I was like, we need to make this. And that's what we then developed together into the idea for Abby, which was the first short film I made post-AFTERS. And, you know, it had funding from an amazing organization called Metroscreen, which sadly no longer exists. But yeah, that was a big plan straight out of film school. It was, I wanted to keep making something as well as finding this job. But I also think the important thing to take away was I didn't focus all of my time just on making that short film. I was also working full-time at SBS at that point, which was, you know, it was an entry-level job, just assisting people in the distribution and marketing departments for home releases. And it was really, really great. And I sort of progressed there, but I wanted to keep both of those things going, learning and being in industry and obviously earning money, very important, but also making my own stuff.
Well, it took me a long time to get over myself and realize that I needed to start small. I just thought, oh, well, I just keep working alone and not networking and make a short film and it'll get into a festival and then someone will give me some money and it'll all get taken care of. Whereas the level of responsibility you took for your own career of like, okay, well, this is an entry-level job in the industry and at the same time I can be working on developing these shorts and the things that I really want to do while leveling up across the board, that escaped me for years.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was such a great job, but I didn't get it through applying for anything. I got it through knowing a person at that organization who just happened to need an assistant. And I interviewed with her for that role and I started one day a week. But once I got in there, something my father always told me was find a way to make yourself indispensable. And so I did. I just worked really hard to find ways I could help everyone and really earn a place there. It also came with really lucky timing that I got hired just before there was the staffing freeze at SBS. And so at that time, they couldn't hire anyone else externally. They could only sort of promote within. So very quickly, I ended up with two part-time jobs with two different departments. And I just always put my hand up for anything. You know, when Insight were looking for production assistance, I was like, yes, I'm here. Or, you know, if they were going to go film something on a weekend for one of the shows behind the scenes for the marketing department, I was always just jumping in it and always making sure I didn't take on more than I was capable of, but always just coming in at a very, very junior level so I could see more people in action and learn by watching and absorbing. It's hard after a degree when there's been a lot of focus on you as an individual and your craft, but there's still so much opportunity to learn from other people that you do have to let go of that ego a little bit.
Certainly. The amount of people that you can get to know and get in front of, I think no matter what the job, you know, working in a cinema, working in traffic management, which I did for a while for Cato Logistics, or any of these things are an opportunity to level up. And no matter what the job is, you will get more out of it by doing the very best you can wherever you are than saying like, this is just a nothing job. It doesn't matter. You know, I can just skate through this.
No, every job matters. Every job matters.
People notice.
And that's a really good point, Robbie, just mentioning Cato.
Yeah.
Cato Logistics is such a brilliant, I don't know if we should be like spruiking one particular organization or not, but I just think Kieran Cato has a really good program that sort of trains up people. And you've worked with him, so you would know better than me, but I've just seen a lot of grads go out of film school, work with him for a little while and just have a really great appreciation for on-set professionalism and how sets work. So yeah, so that seems to be a really great place that grads can go.
It is, and it teaches you how to read a call sheet and treat it like a job and turn up on time and make sure you've got all your stuff and all those things that are so important in proving that you can, hey, now I can trust you with the coffee order, now I can trust you with the script notes and build that credibility and experience ladder. An example that I heard years ago that stuck with me as advice is Roger Corman, a great B-film director and producer and financier from the US, amazing legend in the industry. And he was talking about how some directors would go and say, it's just a little slime creature movie. Like, my real career is waiting. I'm going to do my Oscar-winning film in a couple of years. I'm just going to knock this one out. He said, those directors are no longer working. But the ones who are like, I'm going to make the best slime creature movie you've ever seen, they're the ones who are still working and are doing TV episodes and features and leveling up. Even James Cameron, you know, he was a truck driver and his first film was Piranha 2. And he made a great movie out of Piranha 2.
Yeah, I think, you know, the essence of what we're saying about treat every job with value and importance is kind of the takeaway here. You know, for me, getting out of film school, getting that entry-level job, and then what actually happened for me was I was doing so well at those two part-time positions at SBS that I actually got offered to move into one of them in a full-time role. Mm. And again, I was working in distribution, so I knew I wanted to be a producer, but at that point, I had been working in distribution, which became a fantastic bit of knowledge as a producer. But when they offered me that full-time role, that's when I suddenly went, okay, I think I've actually learned everything I'm going to learn from this opportunity, and now it's time for me to keep moving towards my career goals. And so it was that point that I applied to do my graduate diploma in producing, which is kind of like the equivalent of the master's in producing now. What's interesting is when you're starting out, you kind of start saying yes to everything to just figure things out. But once you start doing that, you do start to find a path, and then you'll get to a place where you have to make choices. And for me, a really key career choice was moving. You know, I could have followed this really fantastic distribution path, which would have been incredibly interesting, but I knew I wanted to work in producing. So that's when I said, okay, no, I'm going to apply to go back to AFTERS to study in a specialization of producing, because ultimately that's where I want to head.
Yeah, just like, you know, a chef would, after culinary school, the best thing they could do rather than getting a good job in a kitchen and leveling up there is, you know, go to Europe and sleep on floors and work with the best chefs out there, you know, during the years where you can live on ramen and just, you know, be absorbing as much as possible. And it can be hard to take that hit after you've had money and starting to do a great job like you had at SBS and say, no, if I want to get to where I really want to be, then I need to make a lateral step, you know, step to the side, work on this, or even step backwards to get where you really want to be. And the same thing for me, I wanted to go back and do full-time directing, but that wasn't the right move for me at the time. And I actually then had an opportunity to move to the US to do a different thing. But you have to make some hard choices. And you also, as you develop your skills and you want to say yes to everything, those choices become super important. And I have described it as being when you transition from being the bucket to the tap, where you have some skills and you have some resources that are valuable to other people, and you've got to choose how you spend those because you can't be involved with everything as much as you might want to. You've got to think about the things where you can add the most value and where you can learn the most.
What's the bucket and the tap analogy though?
So if you're going from, you know, like you start off and you're the bucket, you just need. Like, you know, you're looking for opportunities and you're filling up with experiences and skills and various things until you then become the tap and you're like, oh, I have resources to give and there are people who need the things that I can deliver. So, you know, other people start to come to you to fill up their buckets.
It's a very weird analogy, Robbie.
I'll come up with a better, more movie Yoda way of saying that.
Okay, yeah. You had an incredible big leap, I think, as well, you know, because we were following each other's careers at that time. And I think what was really interesting is you came to a pivot of thinking about specializing, but then pivoting off in a different direction. But what that led you to was producing, and you went away to the US and you continued to learn from other production companies and producers there. And then you actually came back and produced a feature film.
That's right. Yeah. And within very quick succession, you know, I finished uni end of 2010, took a year off and went to Comic-Con in the US and made some contact to some people through someone that I'd been at film school with, Mike Schwartz, great producer, who was running Sam Worthington's company, Filclip Productions in LA at the time. So in 2012, I had applied for directing and not got in. So decided to go to the US and learn to be a development executive and producer. And it was actually by the end of the following year, 2013, that someone else I'd been in class with in 2009, Megan Ryakos, asked me to come back to Australia to produce her first feature. So I went from having produced shorts and music videos for some friends, as well as some of my own stuff, in the space of 18 months, coming back to Australia to produce my first feature.
We definitely have to put a link up for Crushed, because that film in itself was an amazing feat that you all undertook. But to keep to the theme of this episode, what would you say are some of the key takeaways, you know, from our rambling stories of getting started to moving out into the industry and our first real jobs to this idea of you going and producing your first feature film? For me, it was probably finishing producing that short film, Abby, that we talked about, and also getting selected for the graduate diploma of producing. Mine sounds lame compared to producing a feature film.
Not at all. I was so envious of what you achieved with, you know, getting into the grad dip producing, because that was when I hadn't got into the grad dip directing. And I remember you being very, very kind to me, but also giving me some tough love I needed to hear around at your place one night after we both found out and you were top of the world and I was gloomy guts. But it was...
I remember that.
Yeah, but it was so valuable.
It was very special for me getting into my specialization of producing. And yeah, and it sucked that, because it would have been really fun if we had got to work together in the same year. But a greater thing has happened and you've become a great producer. So I'm happy with the results. I hope you are too.
Very much. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm thrilled. But some of the key takeaways for me was, you know, the more people you know, the better. Like, everything is a job interview. Everything is an opportunity. And there's not a single project that I've worked on in the last decade, I think ever, that hasn't involved someone that I went to film school with or someone that I met through AFTERS, which is kind of incredible. I'm really racking my brain to think of a single opportunity or job I've had in that decade that didn't somehow come from that beginning.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to be best friends with everyone at AFTERS. And we were talking last episode about sort of networking and feeling comfortable and confident. And, you know, as somebody who learned to develop those skills, you know, it took me time, but I did find key people that I really got on with and that we collaborated really well together. And so for me, that was really important. Even if you can't see it at the time, you keep those links to those people. And the same as Robbie, I have to draw a bit of a tree. I've got to figure out like my career history tree, but I've never applied for a job in the film industry. That's my biggest thing. It's always been through knowing somebody and having a recommendation. So,
That's not to say that, you know, you have to know somebody. The point is you can get to know people. That's the key takeaway. You've got to get to know people in your cohort and people that they can introduce you to, so on and so forth. That is where these opportunities come from.
And some of that is reaching out. Like, I mean, some of those jobs are through knowing people, but I initiated the knowing of that person, if that makes sense. Like, I was the one to first reach out, not in a please give me something way, in a genuine way, rather. I think the hardest thing is just shedding that idea, if we use your weird analogy of being the bucket, you just need to not be the bucket anymore and only ever be the tap. If you're someone who's full of fantastic ideas or I know that sounds like so much pressure loaded in with that, but it becomes more comfortable the more you do it. But the idea is to just be present, I guess, and when you're getting to know people and accept, you know, that you don't know everything yet, and that's okay. And that's a big takeaway. Remember, you still have lots more to learn. I mean, that's been the greatest asset for me, I think, in everything I do, is loving to learn new things and being really open to learning new things, as well as always wanting to work hard.
That's exactly right, because the amount of times that, you know, both of us have realized how much more we have to learn and how scary that might have been initially, but how gratifying that is now to be like, oh my God, there's so much more we can get to know. So learning to be humble and be open to, and it's okay that you don't know everything. So take that pressure off yourself.
Okay, good place to start.
Yeah, I think that's a great place for us to wrap up for this week. So what are you grateful for this week, Taylor?
Okay, this week my grateful is going to be for people who write game strategies online, because I've been playing a new game called Gloomhaven. It's a board game. I'm playing at home and it is complicated and I'm figuring it out, but I'm really enjoying it. And somebody just wrote the perfect player guide to this character I'm playing. I sound like a real nerd now, but it's okay because I am. But yes, that's my grateful. I'm so grateful, you know, for this person who wrote up a strategy to the Mind Thief in Gloomhaven.
See, you know, slight pivot from that, I am also very grateful for people who write up strategies for things, but I'm talking about PlayStation 4 games. The amount of things I couldn't figure out in Days Gone and in God of War that someone has taken the time to figure out and then tell other people about, those people are awesome. Side note, if you have recommendations, please hit me up with games I should be playing. And the thing I'm most grateful for,
Robbie, how do you have time?
Well, I don't. It's my like 20-minute treat every so often when I'm in between reading things and I can't actually put any creative energy into something anymore. So I need to have a mythical person hit things with a big hammer. But
what are you grateful for this week?
But I'm very grateful, and I think I'm grateful for this every week, is the Batuta Advocate. Those guys are funny as hell and make me really happy.
Amazing. Alrighty, episode 3 down. I'm super grateful that we're still doing this and I hope we are getting better as we go on. And do you want to say anything to sign off?
Nope, just thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you next time.
Oh, and before we go, we actually have some guests who will be interviewing for you soon, including a director's assistant and a production lawyer. So if you have any questions you'd like us to ask people working in those roles, email them through to us. Okay, that's it.
Thanks for listening to the AFTERS Lockdown podcast. Check the show notes for credits and links.